Welcome to episode 17 of Unraveling Karma, an evolutionary astrology podcast to help you deepen self-understanding and make changes for the better. My name is Tom Jacobs, and I'm an evolutionary astrologer, medium, and channel in Tucson, Arizona. And you can find me on the web at www.tdjacobs.com. I have a couple of original natal reports, including one on True Black Moon Lilith and one on preparing for 2012, as well as four books that I've published in the last year that are really interesting and getting some really great feedback from customers and students and clients and colleagues too. The first one is The Soul's Journey 1, and the next one is Saturn Returns, Thinking Astrologically, which is brand new, so check that out. And it's about those milestone events that happen twice in our lives, but it's going to be useful for anybody who wants to learn more about Saturn and learning this approach that I call thinking astrologically, which is looking at everything as being based in energy. So go check that out. Also, Living Myth, Exploring Archetypal Journeys, about how we live the stories of mythic figures in our daily lives and how to make them turn out better than they do in the myth. And also the fourth one is Seeing Through Spiritual Eyes, a memoir of intuitive awakening. And that is a process, sorry, it's a memoir of my 7-year process, but it is a process, from going from denying intuition to embracing it and working with it professionally as a medium and a channel and an intuitive astrologer. So those are all available at the store on my website. I also have a bevy of interesting articles that marry spirituality with astrology. It's very interesting. Go check it out, tdjacobs.com. For this episode, I have a listener question, and then I'm going to do something different in the second half. Just going to keep you in suspense for about 10 minutes. The listener question is from a woman named Amanda, and I'm going to give you her birth data right now. I encourage you, as always, to create the chart and follow along. You'll get a lot out of it, a lot more out of it that way. Her birth date is May 4th, 1939, in Bridgeton, New Jersey. That's USA Earth. And the time is 8:13, that's 8:13 in the morning. You should get a 20-degree Gemini ascendant. Amanda's question is about a relationship that happened very quickly and very intensely and then stopped happening because the other person just needed to withdraw and pull away and kind of close off contact. And Amanda gets that relationship, all her relationship questions about other people are really about her. So she wrote me and said, hey, can you help me understand what I'm supposed to be learning here and why this has affected me so much and why I can't let it go? And so I said, sure. So here we go. So the main things to focus on for this answer are that Pluto natally is square the nodal axis. Pluto in Cancer in the second is square the south node in Taurus in, let's see, that's the 11th. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that natally Amanda has Chiron in Cancer in the first house. And transiting Pluto is opposing it. So it's this kind of, you know, building an answer with these two components. Aspects to Pluto do matter. I'm going to pull those in. But also the transit to Chiron. And that's going to be the focus of this answer. So starting with Pluto in Cancer in the second house, Amanda's, at the soul level, is saying, I'm going to go to Earth and be, you know, learn how to be human, and learn how to be empowered as a discrete being, right? I'm gonna be in this context where I'm surrounded by billions of others, and I seem separate from them. I'm gonna forget that I'm divinity for a while, and I'm gonna go learn how to be human through this lens of Cancer in the second house. The lens of Cancer is always about emotion. It's about seeing the world through feeling and through relating to life and showing up as somebody who feels. So, you know, we can think of a lot of stereotypes that are negative about Cancerian energy when it goes wrong, which, you know, hard on the sleeve, entirely sensitive to everything, or overly sensitive to criticism, or, you know, being concerned about safety, not wanting to grow up, all these kinds of things. But the real goal is to experience being human through the lens of emotion. Because this is in the second house, this has to do with Amanda's capacity to create, develop, maintain, and feed self-esteem. So this symbol on its layers, I'm going to learn, the soul is saying, I'm going to learn how to be empowered by developing a sense of self-esteem and self-confidence and proving myself to myself, and I'm going to do it through the lens of emotion. So, you know, that whenever someone has Pluto in the second house, there's kind of this big mountain this person needs to climb. Because in the second house, we have to prove ourselves to ourselves. And this mountain, however Amanda is going to understand it, is going to be climbed, again, through the lens of emotion. So that's kind of the baseline of what her soul came here to do. She's also got this Mars in Capricorn in the eighth house opposing this Pluto. And it's 7 degrees, and I'm going to use it. It's almost 7 degrees. Some people will argue about some orbs, you know, but I'm going to use up to 8 degrees with an opposition to Pluto. I see it active in my practice and my clients all the time. So this says that this soul's mission of learning to develop self-esteem through experiencing and expressing her, you know, emotive capabilities and feeling is opposed by energies that have to do with Mars, Capricorn, in the eighth house. Now, as she seeks to express her emotional side, right, her personal side, she's going to manifest sexual partners. This is Mars in the eighth house, who have a sense of rigidity and not being willing to change and flow, and you know, not being her, you know, not seeming to directly support this Cancerian mission of flowing and feeling and emoting and being personal. So part of her soul's mission is to experience Mars as an apparent opposition to her. Now, Amanda can choose to learn more about herself and her mission and how important her own self-esteem is if she takes what she learns from those people as reflective of who she really is. Meaning, let's say she's being soft, and the person who is at that point in her life is, you know, who is her partner, her lover, her intimate, her spouse, whatever, is, you know, might show up with a little more rigidity and not accepting this Cancerian feeling energy. And so it's up to her not to say, well, then it must not be good because other people don't like it, or it must not be worth supporting because it's not acceptable to other people. The real, like the spiritual PhD on this Pluto, the coursework and the dissertation is going to involve rewriting what it means when other people don't jive with that flowing feeling softness that is really critical for Amanda to cultivate and express. So what it means is that she's learning about Mars through conflict, through it can be apparent conflict, through being challenged. And ultimately this can serve to give her a view on herself. She can say, oh, well, since it's not important to you, that really, really shows me how important it is to me, and so I need to pick different people. So that's one of the baseline ideas on this Pluto with this opposition to Mars. It is also, it's squaring... Second, what is it squaring? Well, it's squaring Saturn and Aries in the 10th. So there's again, you know, Mars in Capricorn. It's the same. It has a similar kind of vibe as the Saturn in Aries. So again, she's going to be squared. She's going to receive friction from Saturnian people about her Plutonian feeling mission. And again, the job is to not let it stop her, but to help her change and understand just exactly how important her goals are to her so she can actually achieve them. So that's kind of the baseline on this. But that Pluto is square the nodes is that this feeling mission, this mission to feel and express feeling and thereby to love herself and to express herself and develop self-esteem, is square the nodes, which means that it's an unresolved issue from her various lives. The people that she picks in her various lives, in her soul's various lives, to train her, meaning her family, the incubator for conditioning, they don't get something about this. And so Amanda, you have to learn how to make new choices about what is the right role of feeling in life. Okay, so that's the baseline on Pluto. This Chiron in Pisces in the first is an echo of this, meaning the soul's mission has to do with Cancerian energy, being empowered through emotion, being empowered through feeling. Chiron in Cancer in the first is going to make you an antenna for emotional energy. So how do you do that? Amanda, how is it that you experience that? Do you experience that as you're out in the world and you can pick up on what other people's emotions, other people's energy systems are doing? And do you feel that you can't open up because other people's stuff is too overwhelming because it's everywhere? Or are you good with energetic boundaries and energy management and managing your emotions so that you can see what's happening with other people? You can feel it, you can observe, you can witness the emotional stuff in other people, but don't have to be subject to their roller coasters of emotion. Now, since the Pluto is in Cancer, that means you're in some ways very, very good at doing that. But how, I guess I wonder about how experiences in this life have maybe contributed to your lack of confidence regarding energy management and having good boundaries and being able to be chironic in a positive way, which means being compassionate and open-hearted and not dragged down by others' people's stuff because you have very clear boundaries about what is yours and what isn't. So that's kind of my take on that. But as Pluto opposes it from the seventh house, you're going to, and this is a couple year process, and you're not quite in the middle of it, you're going to encounter Plutonian others, right? Plutonian, Capricornian others who challenge this. So this particular person that you met, you had a lot of chemistry with that person, and that's awesome, and that's great. And part of you says, this is what I want. That's what I want. And yet the learning about the right role of emotions and how not to get involved in other people's stories, how not to get dragged down, bogged down, or derailed by other people's emotional issues, other people's energetic snafus that they are doing, on their own, for their own reasons, for their own soul mission and learning reasons, for you not to get derailed by that stuff. And so this Pluto is going to automatic, this transiting Pluto is going to be the invitation to learn more about your emotional self and your needs and your boundaries and your energy management through encountering intense Plutonian others. Now, that said, the way you described the relationship to me, I wouldn't be surprised if this person had something on your vertex, which is at 12 Scorpio in the sixth house. And you also have a Scorpio moon in the sixth house. It's not conjunctive, but I wouldn't be surprised because, and your north node is in Scorpio in the fifth house. And so for you need intense, you need intense love. You need intense loving relationships. And if someone's going to trigger that vertex, it's going to be an orb of that Scorpio north node, which is, in a sense, showing you something you need to do and develop in order to, I guess the phrase would be, complete your education as a human, right? Because the north node is what gets left out of our conditioning just because something always has to as we focus in one area. And so that's going to make you feel like you're complete. So I wouldn't be surprised if that person had something right on that north node or vertex that made you feel like, this is exactly where I need to be. So what I want to tell you is that quality of dynamic, that energy, that kind of connection, and that kind of knowing the other person, and that kind of deep connection, that is possible. That is available to you. And it's out there. And so I'm inviting you to not make that person, in any way, the object or responsible for you feeling complete. So I would encourage you to be open to explore anything that might come your way relationship-wise that might trigger that, because you can. It she is a teacher for you to develop that in yourself, and she's not going to stick around because that's the nature of this Pluto transit. Comes in to show you this thing in capital letters and then disappears for her own reasons that have nothing to do with you. So that's my take on all this and why it's so hard to let it go. Amanda, thank you for writing in with your question. For the second part of this episode, I'm going to do something I've been thinking about doing since I started doing this podcast a couple of years ago, but it just never came up. But for some reason, this karmic story in this well-known person's chart is jumping out at me, and it's his birthday tomorrow, so I figured I might as well just give you what I'm thinking. I usually revert to a blog post when I come up with celebrity profiles, but for some reason this wants to get in audio form, coming through my voice. So I'm gonna do a profile for a few minutes on George Michael. He is the British singer, rock musician, songwriter, etc., who's had kind of an interesting career, and he's in some ways, you know, he worked very hard to cultivate kind of a tough guy heterosexual image, and then, you know, a lot of people will remember, I'm not quite sure about the dates, let's see, I guess it was 1998, in early 1998, he was, I don't know, it was some kind of prostitution-like setup with a male in a bathroom somewhere that turned out, and the guy turned out to be a police officer. It was kind of a sting. So you know, he had a fair amount of public shaming about that. I think he didn't intend to reveal that he was a homosexual. So I started looking at his chart, and some stuff jumped out, and I thought it would be a great karmic profile to do for the podcast. This idea of unraveling karma and how we manifest invitations in the form of difficult, challenging lessons, you know, but it's all for the soul's growth, and so we have to learn how to accept there's perfection in it. So his birth data are June 25th, 1963, at 6 a.m., in Finchley, England. That's F like Frank, Inchley, England. And you should get a 17 degree Cancer ascendant. So as I look at this, and I added in all the little things that I add in. So I added in Lucifer and Eros and Eris and Arjun Surya. I added all that stuff in. And what jumps out is that this South Node is in Capricorn in the seventh house, which means that he's conditioned in many lives, meaning the families his soul picks to be born into to teach him about how to live, they are colored very, very strongly by Capricorn seventh house energy. And the seventh house has to do with who we are in our relationships. And so lots of times when people are conditioned by a South Node in Libra or South Node in the seventh house, they're accustomed to defining themselves in terms of the expectations of others. And Capricorn has to do with respectability, responsibility, a lot about image, because there's a lot of should that goes on with Saturn and Capricorn. So that's the first thing. Square that South Node, which means that his environments don't really teach him how to do this well, meaning he picks families who have this as a missing step, and so he doesn't get to learn from them. He doesn't get conditioned with healthy versions of this energy. So I should say that there's something about these energies that he has to figure out on his own. And learn to make new choices other than his conditioning, his habits, his preferences, you know, what he's observed other people to do. When we have squares to the nodes, we're always doing knee-jerk reactions and getting ourselves into one kind of trouble or feeling that we're not successful or not healthy, something. So he has square the nodes from Aries in the 10th house, Jupiter, and Eris, E-R-I-S. I've started to use Eris in my practice. I'm working on an Eris. Actually, I've written an Eris chapter for volume 2 of Living Myth, the book's, you know, the book about exploring how we live these archetypes. So, talking about Jupiter square the nodes, we're talking about, and it's in the 10th house in Aries. So there's an element of public persona here. Like the public persona here needs to be edited. This Jupiter in Aries is about the spontaneous, sudden expression, this having faith in how one is wired without mediating anything. So it's this instinctual, here I show up, I burst onto the scene. Now I just remember being a kid and being exposed to the music and the music videos of Wham, one of the groups that he was involved with, that he got a lot of fame from, and that Jupiter in Aries was definitely there. But as an unresolved issue in his life, it's conjunct Eris, and Eris is about creating chaos that ultimately serves evolution, but it actually stirs things up for people. The story of Eris has to do with the whole Judgment of Paris from the Greek mythology, where she's the goddess of discord, and she is not invited to this particular wedding. Every other Olympian deity is invited to this wedding, but Eris, because she's the goddess of discord and her name means strife. You're not inviting her to your wedding. I don't care who you are. So she's not invited. She's angry. She's hurt. She throws a golden apple that's inscribed, to the fairest, or to the one who is the fairest, in the middle of three goddesses who are invited. And, eventually, this decision making, because Zeus won't make the decision, and he enlists this humble shepherd whose name is Paris, and Paris comes in and ends up choosing the one who gives him the bribe, the one of the three goddesses who gives him the bribe that appeals to him most, which is the most beautiful woman in the world, who is Helen of Troy. And when he whisks her away, then you have the beginning of the Trojan War, which changed the world. So that's the kind of story. But this idea of this being conjunct the South Node ruler in Aries in the 10th, one way of looking at it is when he embodies his natural sense of sexuality, it seems scandalous. So he has, George Michael has different lives where he's trying to figure out how to embody his natural sense of sexuality, talking about Aries energy. That kind of, these are the juices that are flowing in me. This is how I'm wired. This is my natural way of being. So that's an issue for him in many, many lives. And when we learn lessons in the 10th house, one of the, one way it can go is being recognized for doing something really well. Another way it can go is being shamed for, running against the ideas of the collective mind when it comes to what we should be like. I haven't followed up. I haven't read about George Michael in the last, since this happened, essentially. But as far as the karmic need to learn more about healthy ways of expressing and embodying, it's not just expressing and embodying because he does that. It's showing publicly who he is. That's the big issue. So that's a big issue. And then there's something else in here. Well, again, Pluto in Virgo in the third house is conjunct Uranus. He's in that mini generation where they traveled close together, but it's also conjunct Mars within 2 degrees in Virgo in the third house. So coupled with this Jupiter in Aries, Jupiter Eris in Aries in the 10th house square the nodes, he needs to learn about this Aries expression. The soul's mission, Pluto, is conjunct Mars in the third house. So he is learning to be empowered by speaking truthfully about his own energy and who he is and what's desirable for him, what's attractive for him. So that's a big part of his learning. And then to wrap this up, the North Node is in Cancer in the first house. And so his comfort zone is going to be that opposite. His comfort zone is going to be Capricorn 7th. And that has a lot to do with deferring to the expectations of others, deferring to the mental constructs, the ideas, the institutions, the structures that are set up by other people. And whenever, just between you and me, whenever structures are set up by other people and we live within them, we always feel we have to sacrifice some individuality in order to fit into them. And that's our culture. That's what's happening here because we are organized. This is culture, this is society. So it's going to be more comfortable for him to defer to the expectations, demands, and desires of some other people. But this North Node learning is Cancerian in the first house. Again, Cancer through the lens of emotion. First house, this embodying, how I look at him with this North Node is for him to be totally honest and open with himself and as a result, by embodying who he is to himself, being honest with other people, his own emotional makeup, like feeling, which will take him away from these expectations of others. Because talking about the reality of what he's feeling in the moment and going with that and letting his, not like wearing his heart on his sleeve and letting his, you know, emotions lead him on a roller coaster or windy mountain, you know, curvy road, but leading with his feeling, with his personal subjective feeling of who he is. And that will automatically take him away from that conditioning, you know, of the shame and expectation that comes from other people, and actually having him embody, you know, to round out what his soul came here to learn, because that North Node is what we haven't done a lot of, what we haven't experienced a lot of. Oh, wait, one more thing about George Michael. Well, one more thing. especially given the emphasis I was putting on Chiron and Cancer in the first for Amanda, George Michael's Chiron is retrograde in Pisces, but a degree and a half off the midheaven in the ninth house. So, you know, continuing with this theme where we're talking about the South Node and Capricorn and the square to the nodes from the 10th house, this Chiron conjunct the midheaven, which is the beginning of the 10th house, which has to do with the Saturn archetype. Chiron is always a marker of difference. Chiron is always where we stand out and we're unique. Now, we tend to expect rejection for that uniqueness, but the reality is it's just about being different and learning about how each person is unique by being, you know, we are unique, and therefore, you know, we can know that everyone is unique. We have a lot of experiences along the way of expecting rejection, so we manifest rejection for it. So Chiron conjunct the midheaven is going to be kind of an energetic knot within him that says, if I show myself in public in all of my uniqueness, I'm going to be rejected for it. And that is part of him creating this persona, this tough guy heterosexual persona, when that was one part of him, but that was probably, it's probably not the part of him that, you know, to come to the forefront to make him feel is really represented as possible, really showing himself. That's not the part of him that really needs to come out and be seen in a healthy way. So this Chiron conjunct the midheaven is going to be afraid of showing oneself in public. Now, when his uniqueness or his difference is revealed, there's this sense of shame about it. So I don't know if there's any, you know, random chance that George Michael is going to be finding my podcast, but this is what I would tell him. I would say that in the ways that you are unique, in the ways that, you know, there are things about you that set you apart that inevitably come out in your public persona. There's nothing wrong with this. You can actually inspire people by being honest about your vulnerability in that arena. So that would be my message to Mr. Michael should he ever happen across Unraveling Karma episode 17. So that takes us to the end of this episode. Thank you for listening. My name is Tom Jacobs, and if you like this style of analysis, if you like how this how I kind of trace the South Node as conditioning, the South Node ruler as our role in various places, and then Pluto as the mission of the soul and the soul's empowerment journey, you should go to my site and order The Soul's Journey 1, Astrology, Reincarnation, and Karma with a medium and channel. I go through and I explain all of this stuff. I teach you about the difference, you know, the different paradigms of astrology and how we're heading into the Aquarian age, and how to look at a birth chart from the soul's vantage point so you can see it as your soul sees it. You know, what are you here to learn? What are you here to do? And how can you look at that and actually do it, actually heal the stuff from the past and do it? I also include a number of example charts to run you through, to illustrate, to bring alive the four-step method of chart analysis that I teach in the book, which is which was taught to me. Parts of it were taught to me from my experiences in Steve Forrest's apprenticeship program, but then the rest of it and how to get a bird's eye view on what the soul is here to do was taught to me by an ascended master named Thoth. who's kind of a character, and I talk about him a little bit too. So check out the book. If you like this podcast, you will love the book. And that's at my site, www.tdjacobs.com. On the store page, all of those books are available. And again, my name is Tom Jacobs. Thank you for listening. If you have any questions of your own, send them to karma@tdjacobs.com with your full birth data, day, month, year, time of day, and location, and also your question, and if you want me to use your real first name or if you want me to make one up. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.